Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, October 16th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Among our top stories this evening,
Health and Child Welfare Minister David Parirenyatwa says his ministry urgently needs $3.5 million to ensure Harare is adequately prepared to tackle an Ebola outbreak.
The rest of the world, and I think all of us, are saying, let's contain the Ebola in the three or four countries where it is. But in our own individual countries, we'd like to make sure that we put up preventive measures that are sustainable.
Political temperatures are rising in ZANU-PF with First Lady Grace Mugabe in a not-so-thinly-veiled attack calling for the ouster of Deputy President Joyce Mujuru, accusing her of promoting factionalism in a bid to take over the leadership of the party from her husband.
This is the clearest indication that all she is doing in the provinces has one political objective, and that political objective is to remove the Vice President.
And about 10 civil society groups in Bulawayo have withdrawn their membership from the Crisis in Zimbabwe coalition, accusing its leadership of taking key decisions without consulting them.
Political temperatures are rising in the ruling ZANU-PF party after First Lady Grace Mugabe, who has been on a so-called Meet the People tour, embarked on a not-so-thinly-veiled attack on Vice President Joyce Mujuru, calling for her ouster should she fail to apologize for allegedly fanning factionalism in the party. Mrs. Mugabe, who was in Bindura's Chipaze Stadium in Mashonaland West Central today, told thousands of ZANU-PF supporters that the province was warm to a faction leader, adding, quote, "The demon of factionalism was bred in the same province." She added that, quote, "But soon we are going to baby dump your faction leader come Congress in December." Vice President Joyce Mujuru, who is believed by many to be leading a rival faction to that led by Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, hails from Mashonaland Central Province. She did not attend the rally. Mrs. Mujuru and Mr. Mnangagwa have, however, rejected claims they are harboring presidential ambitions.
The First Lady, without mentioning names, urged the faction leader to go and apologize to President Mugabe, warning party members will remove her from office at the party's December Congress if her husband is not willing to dump her. At another campaign stop in Matabeleland South, the First Lady took a swipe at what she said were, quote, "do-nothing vice presidents," she alleged, were piggybacking on the president's successes. She also accused some youths of being used by factional leaders to boo her and cause chaos. The First Lady concludes her tour tomorrow in Mashonaland East Province. Efforts to get a comment from Vice President Mujuru were futile. Information Minister Jonathan Moyo, who has previously said the First Lady is not slinging out Mrs. Mujuru, was also unavailable for comment. Political analyst Pedzisai Ruhanya, who's the director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, says rumor mongering is destroying ZANU-PF.
Yeah, First Lady, there is no doubt that the remarks by Grace Mugabe were aimed at the Vice President Joyce Mujuru. This is the clearest indication that all she is doing in the provinces has one political objective, and that political objective is to remove the Vice President as the Vice President and Second Secretary of the ruling party. For things that we really need to interrogate, there was a statement at some point where she said that these people want to destroy me, they want to drag me in the streets. My suspicion is that within this factional infighting, there could be some individuals who are aligned to the Vice President, Joyce Mujuru, who could have said something against the First Family and hence this fury and this anger from the First Lady.
Some senior ZANU-PF officials have warned that if this factionalism is not contained, the party might actually split. Is there a possibility that this might happen?
I don't see ZANU-PF splitting. ZANU-PF has just come from an election which it thinks it won and it is in control. And historically, there are few examples where you see ruling parties going for a split after winning power, after consolidating power. And there are very few who would dare the president to the extent that they can challenge him and think that they can survive outside ZANU. It's very difficult to survive outside ZANU because ZANU-PF is a competitive authoritarian regime, a clientelist, a kleptocratic, paternalistic, neo-patrimonial regime that survives on the conflation between the state and the party. And anyone who challenges Mugabe or who threatens to quit will not survive outside ZANU because they all survive on ZANU. They are parasitic.
That was political analyst Pedzisai Rohanya, who's the director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute. You are speaking there with Blessing Zulu.
ZANU-PF Central Committee member Joseph Chuma, who attended the Bulawa rally, says the First Lady's now popular slogan, "Pansile Gama Talks" or "Down with Gama Talks," which she also chanted in Bulawa yesterday. He says the chant is not necessarily directed on an individual, but anyone who tries to destroy the party from within.
Like if you probably go back to events, there was a time when the president spoke about weevils in the party, you know, coming in and trying to destroy us from within. And it was said that those weevils definitely needed some sort of a pesticide to get rid of them. And that pesticide was called gamma tox. Right. So now those people have been sort of termed gamma tox, right? When people say pass lama gamma tox, they are really just trying to say that down with those people that want to cause divisions and want to kill the party from within, because like a mass party been infiltrated, of course. So it's just a specification. It's not specified to anybody really, but anyone who has that agenda of trying to destroy the party from within definitely was saying pass the lava, because we are causing us an unnecessary headache and mayhem that our party does not deserve it for.
And that was ZANU-PF Central Committee member Joseph Chuma on the line from Bulawayo with Studio 7's Thandekile Mhlanga.
Health and Child Welfare Minister Dr. David Parirenyatwa says his ministry urgently needs $3.5 million to ensure Harare is adequately prepared to tackle an Ebola outbreak. West African nations are currently reeling under an Ebola outbreak that has killed more than 4,000 people. The health ministry has since the outbreak received $132,000 from the Treasury to prepare to fend off a possible outbreak, but Dr. Parirenyatwa says more is needed. He told Studio 7, the money was used to train healthcare workers and awareness campaigns. Dr. Parirenyatwa says Zimbabwe as a country will increase the preventive measures, promoting an Ebola strategy targeting prevention. The prevention strategy aims to ensure all health workers are trained to handle potential cases of Ebola and to ensure that all medical institutions, including the Wilkins Infectious Diseases Hospital, which will directly handle Ebola cases, are properly equipped to deal with the outbreak. Reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Health and Child Welfare Dr. David Parirenyatwa, who explains the measures Zimbabwe is taking to prevent and handle a possible outbreak in the country.
Our three strategies have always been based on prevention, and prevention. So all that money, we really wanted to go towards prevention, because the rest of the world, and I think all of us, are saying, let's contain the Ebola in the three or four countries where it is. But in our own individual countries, we'd like to make sure that we put up preventive measures that are sustainable. And for that, we have put up a budget where most of the money will go towards training and appropriate equipment.
When you speak about training and appropriate equipment, what exactly is Zimbabwe doing to train its healthcare workers?
It is important that when you are training, you are looking at particularly the frontline people, the port health authorities, that they are equipped with the knowledge on Ebola and how they approach and manage passengers, for an example, at the port health authorities. Then the next important training is at our hospitals, where we've designated certain of our hospitals as possible isolation units. And that training is important so that health personnel don't necessarily get frightened and panic on a patient who may have symptoms simulating Ebola when, in fact, it may not be Ebola.
When a hospital or healthcare worker deems someone to have the Ebola virus, what should healthcare workers and hospitals do, but also patients who suspect they might have Ebola?
You may have symptoms that are similar to malaria or a flu or typhoid. But the most important thing is to get a history of having contact, intimate contact, with somebody who has had Ebola or a dead body from Ebola. If they get that history, then there's that link between those symptoms and the history of having come from that particular area. Then you want to possibly isolate that particular patient very quickly.
Looking at the case that recently occurred at Wilkins Infectious Disease Hospital in regards to Zimbabwe having to send the Ebola sample to South Africa, will Zimbabwe now be able in the nearest future to test for Ebola within the country?
The most important thing is that we need what you call a level 4 type of laboratory. And that level 4 laboratory we do not have here in Zimbabwe. For now, the only recognized one is in South Africa, and that is the one we are using.
That was Health and Child Welfare Minister Dr. David Parrenya speaking with Tatenda Gumbo from Victoria Falls.
United States Ambassador to Zimbabwe Bruce Wharton today dispersed the second tranche of grants under his special self-help program, saying the program is apolitical and targeted at community-based development projects. Ivan Chifera has more details.
Speaking at the signing ceremony of the small grants, Ambassador Wharton said the grants are meant to advance projects that tangibly improve the lives of the community and encourage future development.
We never ask a project, you know, what political party do you belong to or who your MP is. We do try to get geographic diversity. We try to make sure that, you know, there's a project from the Matabili land, from Mashvingo, from Manika land, from the Mashona lands. But otherwise, we try to keep these things as apolitical as possible. We don't care what party you're from. If you're doing the sort of grassroots community development that these programs are about, these projects are intended to support, that's fine.
He said the program, which is distinct from the larger scale assistance carried out by the United States government in Zimbabwe, focuses on projects that affect people immediately and improve the quality of life.
Today, we sign agreements to support projects on a variety of things. Let me mention a few of those. The purchase of peanut butter manufacturing equipment and workshops to help make sure that people know how to use the equipment and can profit from it. We will help support installation of a borehole and build a garden fence for a market garden, create some income generation for that community.
Among the six organizations that collectively got the small grants totaling $50,000 are Makokoa Development Trust of Bulawayo, Light to the Disabled People of Zimbabwe, Jiva Jiva Secondary School of Matabele North, and Orphaned Children Care and Support Trust, or OCAST of Bikita in Mashingo. OCAST Programs Manager Edmond Duna thanked the United States Ambassador, saying the assistance would go a long way in improving the lives of thousands of orphaned children in Bikita. He said the money would be used for peanut butter production, among other activities.
We got $6,000 from the American Embassy. It went a long way because it was meant for purchasing peanut butter meal and the sheller and the roaster. So far, we have received $3,950 as the first disbursement, of which we have managed to purchase the peanut butter meal and the sheller. And we also bought some bottling equipment and managed to make some stickers and labels for the peanut butter making project.
Sidu Mobebe, secretary of the Makokoa Development Trust, said they would use the money for broiler production in his poverty-stricken constituency.
We are going to formulate and implement some developmental agendas, some developmental projects, such as broiler production and other projects emanating from the production of broilers, so that we try and, to a lesser extent, alleviate the amount of or the astronomical amount of poverty that is in Makokoba.
A few weeks ago, Ambassador Wharton distributed $90,000 under the same program. The Ambassador Special Self-Help Program started in Zimbabwe in 1980, and more than $1 million has been distributed in the last 10 years. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Meanwhile, two beneficiaries of a four-month United States program focusing on community development say they are now implementing various skills acquired in the U.S., which include creating partnerships and working with meager resources. Notando Mpofu and Thomas Sitwale, who participated in the program in 2012 and 2013, told an outreach session held at the embassy's Bulawayo Corner today that some community projects can even be run with insufficient funds. Studio 7's Gibbs Dube speaks to Stoli about this and related issues.
What we usually look at mainly when we are doing our work is money, partnerships in the form of money, but partnerships in the form of programming, partnerships also in the form of ideas. So these are some of the things that I meant in the United States. Also about stakeholder engagement, how to map and engage the stakeholders in the community, identifying those who share similar concerns or similar issues with you. It also helps what maybe can be called coalition building.
Can you give us examples of, let's say, partnerships that we've actually created and stakeholder engagements?
Yes. I'll say, for example, in Plumtree, what we did in one of our thematic areas, which is spreading awareness around climate change issues, we partnered with Oxfam in spreading awareness. And as a result of that, even though there was no money involved, it actually led us identifying some stakeholders who were working also with Oxfam. And we coupled that with our stakeholder meeting, where we said our community is actually a greatest resource in terms of ideas and in terms of the resources that are not necessarily financial. And as a result of that, we've been working with the diaspora and community, especially our brothers and sisters who are based in Johannesburg, to address this challenge, climate change, especially the water crisis.
That was Thomas Sitwale of the Plumtree Development Trust speaking there with Studio 7's Gibbs Dube from Bulawayo.
And now we take a look at regional and international news.
A cousin of slain model River Steenkamp told a South African judge today that a Paralympic athlete Oscar Pistorius, convicted of killing her, needs to pay for what he has done.
The British Broadcasting Corporation says its English language website is no longer accessible in China, a move slammed by the broadcaster as an act of deliberate censorship.
And the United Nations General Assembly is expected today to elect 5 new members to the Security Council, each for a 2-year term. As reported earlier, Zimbabwe is not well prepared, Chris, for the Ebola outbreak that is currently ravaging the West African nations. The preparedness of all nations, not only Zimbabwe, has been called into question, even as the United States has suffered what Centers for Disease Control officials are calling a breach in protocol that has left two healthcare workers infected. For perspective, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with Dr. Brighton Chireka of the Manor Clinic in the United Kingdom and Dr. Rutendo Bonde, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association for Doctors for Human Rights.
If the minister has been saying, you know, preparedness is well on its way, then the entry points are hidden from us. But once the ministry speaks out and says, no, we really do need 3.5 million, it means that entry points for people to well-wishers to come on board become easier, and it's a welcome admission.
Dr. Chireka, what's your reaction?
Yeah, I think it's a welcoming acknowledgement from the Minister of Health that we have been expecting them to do, because all along a lot of questions were being asked. Are we prepared? Are we ready for this?
Dr. Bonde, I spoke today with Dr. Parire Nyatwa, and he said Zimbabwe's strategy will be focused on prevention. Do you think that Zimbabwe will be capable of following through if this is all implemented?
We have a pool of highly professional and highly skilled members of the medical fraternity that I don't have a doubt. What needs to be assured to well-wishers is accountability for those resources that are being raised and proper management of those resources that are being raised.
Dr. Chireka, looking at the previous incident that Zimbabwe had in regards to a case that was thought to be Ebola but obviously has now come out to be negative, how would you look at that situation and rate Zimbabwe's response in regards to how it was handled?
Yeah, there's something that is quite interesting when you prepare for something and then when you actually deal with that situation, even here in the UK or even in America, you can have a good preparation, but what you're only judged with what you do on the day of situation. So what has happened in this incident is actually an eye-opener. You can improve from that. I think there are several lessons to be learned from that because it shows that we are not yet well prepared to deal with an outbreak.
Dr. Bonde, same question to you, but also looking at what Dr. Chireka just pointed out, the preparedness, even looking at what is happening here in the United States where there were issues of protocol breach and also issues of infections after the first initial Ebola case in the country.
The concept of having a protocol on paper and actually implementing it, you know, the strength of the systems and how robust the system is only determined by what happens on the ground when you are actually faced with the scenario that you have been preparing yourself for. If we look at, you know, systems which are supposed to be more advanced than ourselves, failing to contain the epidemic and failing to adhere to protocols, it makes us introspect into our own systems even deeper.
And Dr. Chireka, I'll end here with you. Moving forward, looking at what is happening in the countries that are dealing with the issue of Ebola, where figures are looked at to possibly double in the next few weeks, what can be done globally to assess this situation?
As everyone is talking about prevention, prevention is the only way forward this time around, and also education. And what I think is for us to contain this outbreak, we need to make sure that people understand our tradition, because if you look in these West African countries, they've got their rituals when it comes to death and burial. But people have to understand that these dead bodies are also infectious. You can't send a white person to go and talk to people about their culture and expect them to understand. But the resources are needed as of now. Everyone has to channel the resources. I think we have missed the boat, but all hope is not lost.
That was Dr. Brighton Chireka of the Manor Clinic in the United Kingdom. And we also heard the views of Dr. Rutendo Bonde, who is the chairperson of the Zimbabwe Association of Doctors for Human Rights.
The Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe is reportedly split, with some of the rebelling members accusing the union's leadership of advancing ZANU-PF politics at the expense of the purely remunerated teachers. Thomas Chiripasi has more details from Harare.
Some members of the PTUZ today announced that they have left the teachers' union to form a splinter organization, alleging that PTUZ Secretary General Raymond Majongwe has abandoned the founding values of the union. Wilson Makanyaire, the interim president of the new union, calling itself the Progressive Professional Teachers Union of Zimbabwe, told Studio 7 that Majongwe was now advancing ZANU-PF politics at the expense of the teachers.
Soon after the elections of the elections, he went on to sing for the devil. He went on to appraise ZANU-PF. He went on to accredit the elections as free and fair. He went on to forget even the teachers' aspirants. For example, Ray was demanding $1,200 for a teacher, but soon after elections, he was seeing glory for $300. And we even doubted him. Was primarily it was Ray who said the teachers being underpaid. Primarily it was Ray who said you cannot talk of poverty that I'm lying for a teacher. You need to uplift them. But surprisingly, Ray today is singing the same song. He's talking of poverty that I'm lying. $500 per month. What is that?
Studio 7 failed to reach Majongwe for his side of the story as his mobile phone was unreachable all day. PTUZ President Takava Firajou told Studio 7 Makanyaire has never been a PTUZ leader. He said Makanyaire was in fact helped by the PTUZ when he was on the verge of losing his job. Joe said he wished Makanyaire well, adding the PTUZ will never be split. He said all the members are behind the United PTUZ. Meanwhile, Makanyaire said his new union has already been registered with the government, adding that the new organization has also recruited over 2,000 members countrywide so far. Makanyaire has urged government to do an upward review of teachers' salaries to at least $1,200 per month, saying teachers are not happy with the salaries that they are being paid currently.
Looking at the teachers' stomach, the teachers' budget, how much does it change in Zimbabwe? Anything above 1,200 is okay. Either there is man or there is no man, we don't mind. All we are saying is government must look into it. The employer must satisfy our conditions. If they don't have money, then something must be done. We cannot continuously work. You see, it is important to go into a classroom when you are happy. We can't teach our own kids. So to say we can work for $10 or we can sympathize with the employer that the economy is at, we can't. We want our money.
The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions is also urging the government to ensure that all workers are paid wages and salaries that are above the poverty-datum line. Meanwhile, Makanyaire has warned that his organization will call for a teacher strike in January if the government does not effect a pay rise when Finance Minister Patrick Chinamasa presents his 2015 national budget. Minister Chinamasa is expected to present the national budget before Parliament next month. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
Meanwhile, about 10 civil society groups in Bulawayo have withdrawn their membership from the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, accusing its leadership of taking key decisions without consulting them. The organizations, including Bulawayo Agenda, Radio Dialogue, and the Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association, say previous engagements with the leadership have failed to address their grievances. Reporter Ntunga Melinkomo reached Bulawayo Agenda official Meli Ndube.
The board, led by the chairperson, Mr. Dewa Mavinga, had reduced the whole coalition into just a board kind of organization, an organization that is run by the board with the sheer disregard of the aspirations and principles that brought us together in the first place. The main cause of our pullout is constitutional amendments without due process, constitutional amendments without due participation of the membership that have a far-reaching implications on the form and the principles of the coalition.
Did you try to address this issue with the authorities?
Yes, we have tried countless times. But the time that I can cite that still comes to mind is early this year, where we called the chairperson. We called him with his two senior members of the secretariat to come down to Bulawayo to explain to us what we're hearing from the media, what we're hearing from rumors, and what we're also hearing in good authority through other board members that we had called to come and explain to us what was happening. So we realized that the coalition was being used to settle personal scores. We realized that the coalition was not giving members any update about what was happening. We realized that the coalition was taking for granted its membership.
That was Bulawayo Agenda official Meli Dube on the line from Harare. A Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition spokesman Mfundo Mlilo considered that all was not well in the organization, adding a crucial meeting will be held next week to take stock of the umbrella body. Chris, time is not on our side. Now we recap today's top stories.
Health and Child Welfare Minister David Parire Nyatwa says his ministry urgently needs $3.5 million to ensure Harare is adequately prepared to tackle an Ebola outbreak.
And political temperatures are rising in the ruling ZANU-PF party, with First Lady Grace Mugabe in a not-so-thinly-veiled attack today calling for the ouster of Deputy President Joyce Mujuru, accusing her of promoting factionalism in a bid to take over the leadership of the party from her aging husband.
That's our broadcast this evening. My name is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.
And I'm Sandra Nyaira, wishing you a pleasant evening and a very good night, leaving you in the capable hands of Sandekile Mhlanga and Chris Gande.